Hello, here we are again to podcast Chris, me, and this time Ashley. Welcome.
Hi,
welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And while Chris is going to give an introduction, I'm going to open the beers.
Brilliant. So it's that time of year again when they announced the Nobel Prize winners for this year. And it occurred to me, and we've been talking about it a little bit, that the ceremony and this sort of event where we pick a scientist and we suddenly they become part of the Hall of Fame, it's kind of quasi-religious. And this started a whole debate between us all about whether, well, what is the difference between science and religion?
Well, that's not really... I guess that's not the point we try to make, because the differences are obvious, and there are thousands, blogs, posts, books, whatever on this, on how they're different. I think what we've discussing more, since we're, while being scientists, we're also critics of science in a way, how science behaves or how the system is more similar to religion than it wants to be. Because science is in a way the arch enemy of religion.
Or it
builds
itself.
At least that's
the understanding,
right?
Yeah.
Can we clink before you drink?
Formal.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Nice to have you here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Again.
I guess it's just a thing now that we have a clink interruption every episode. Yeah. What have you been talking about? We've been saying that science understands itself as the arch enemy of religion. Because it makes a lot of similar claims, right? Makes claims about the creation, existence of the universe, of mankind.
Claims ultimate truth.
Yep. It's also just historically been at odds, like, you know, with
I suppose because religion got angry at science.
Mm-hmm. At some point.
At some point.
The heretics, the whole time we were burning people for saying
poor
that
Galileo.
The... Oh my god. R.I.P.
I guess we found a few points where science is more similar to religion than it wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
Not really content-wise, I guess. There's no evidence for 6 24-hour days of creation. That's not our point here at all. The point is more the institution itself, and as Chris just said, even though in science, at least we try to decouple the person from their achievements, the Nobel Prize kind of sanctifies people.
Yeah.
So now they're saints. Last week, they were just scientists doing their thing, and now they are saints. Like, when they come to a hall, people are going to sit in their chairs after. It's like, oh my goodness, he sat here. And a week ago, they were just struggling to get the next paper into Nature or wherever, and now it's different people now.
I think that one of the Nobel Prize winners last year was even left academia because he wasn't able to get funded anymore. And then the following year, he won a Nobel Prize.
I thought a decade after or something, but
this also happened.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And for one of Professor Radcliffe, one of these year's winner in medicine and physiology, he had his paper rejected in Nature, it was in the 80s or so, because it wasn't interesting enough or not...
scientific
enough, and now he won the Nobel Prize. So this picture with this rejection letter toward the end of it is kind of interesting.
But I had a bit of a, like, I suppose a crisis of faith in my science, because when I started questioning myself about whether science is a set of truths that are, like, set in stone and we know absolutely, I realized that I think I know about an electron, but it's a belief in an electron. Like, I only know that the electron exists because other people wrote about it, and I believe that they were right. So
in a way, I guess what scientists would say now is you trust the scientists who discovered the electrons and described the behavior and the direction with whatever, all these things. And it's only trust. It's not belief. This trust can be revoked if you were presented conflicting evidence. For example, I don't know, the electron doesn't exist. And it's actually tiny angels holding nuclei together or something like that.
I really hope that's true.
Yeah, nice.
We get a picture of those.
Yeah, exactly.
You have my point, right? That this trust can be revoked. But what would have to happen for you to not believe in the electron anymore? Or trust in the scientist's work anymore? Do you think that's possible even?
I don't know, it's gone so far now that the whole of science keeps that trust so fundamentally that you could you can call it a belief in the sense that it's a group of people all coming together with a single certified like mindset that they are holding together.
And I guess now you could say that either the evidence is so strong that it cannot be proven wrong anymore, or it's just been out there for so long, we're so convinced because so much depends on it and all these things that people also wouldn't give it up anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just think about how many papers would need to be redacted. We'd have to completely shift the entire system.
Do you think that happens? That's similar to what's happened in religion in a way, that there are ideas that have become so dogmatic and so fossilized that they can't redact or change themselves. But previously, they probably would have changed. I mean, there have been debates in religion.
Yeah, I think if you look back at like people that do like more historical studies on the Bible and things like that, like there's evidence that it's sort of been tampered with, that these aren't the texts that were actually written in their full form. People have gone back in and added things that they deemed relevant or taken out things that they also haven't found relevant. I think like the Dead Sea Scrolls is an example. For example, that's like the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Dead Sea Scrolls were these like this series of texts that were found that were like written around the same time that like Jesus was around, and they've Hebrew and stuff, and so they seem to be, I don't know if they've actually been proven, so I know I don't want to say it, but they seem to be written around the same time, so they could have actually been like canon for the Bible, like they could have actually been added to the Bible, but then they were not chosen, sort of.
There are more than four.
I know what you're talking about. There was this this council of some city when they agreed on the four.
Yeah.
What are they called in English? I don't even know.
The Testaments.
Four Testaments.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, not the four Testaments.
It's
wrong.
The four. The four. It's like there's the apostles, and then what do they do?
I'm gonna Google it and add it in there. Now it's the four gospels.
Glad we know Google that now. Said that.
It's so embarrassing.
Yeah.
Okay.
As you can tell, we're all very religious people.
Okay.
But I still think that science is like it has. It's in some respects, it really resembles the church. It has this. It has the kind of sanctification system, but it also has the hierarchies of people with information and the way like laws and ordinances like handed down as to how you're supposed to act.
You mean from professor to downwards? Like it's the top of the pyramid of professor, because then it's a very flat.
Well, I suppose
building,
the top
right?
is like Nobel Prize winning.
Department.
Editors, even. I would even go as editors.
Oh, a whole different.
Yeah, so it's like editors, and then it's, you know, like PIs that are successful, and then it's like, you know, less successful professors or professors that are just under that PI. Then, of course, you have postdocs and PhD students, and then those little bachelor students that you get to run all of your experiments.
Yeah, but you're right. Even among professors, there's this, it's a bit like
absolutely.
A pyramid. I came back from this conference and people asked me, oh, she was there as well. Did you talk to this and this professor? She's really inspiring and really great. And yeah, I did. It was also
did she touch you? Did you heal your...
No, but she asked a question.
Wait, if we're talking about the Catholic Church, we need to be careful about talking about touching. We need to really specify.
I think the equivalent is asking a question after someone's talk or poster, and she did that to me.
Wow, can I like touch your hand?
And now all your experiments work.
No, nothing works.
So
just told you, her thing doesn't.
She's not a great scientist.
Let's get back to the talk.
Let's before we criticize his work too much. Let's get back to it.
There's definitely cult. Like, we all dress the same. We have special robes.
Well, we don't all dress the same. We dress the same for security reasons. We all dress the same for safety reasons.
I'm sure maybe someone in the Vatican says this as well. We all dress the same for security reasons. Otherwise, anyone could be a priest.
Do you think so?
I don't know.
No.
Does your white lab coat actually keep you safe? I mean, yeah, of course, the goggles.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I mean, like, if you spill something on yourself, like, it's not going to, like, protect you against, like, a burn or something, though.
Yeah, they're designed in chemistry.
No way.
So they're,
oh, I didn't know that. See, this is... I'm a epidemiologist, so I don't work with any white coat. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so the coats are supposed to be when you get it on you, you can strip the coat off as quickly as possible, and your clothes are still there. And the other one is if you get on fire, they're not supposed to be flammable compared to others.
So in pop culture, the stereotypical scientist, whatever it may be, wears a white coat, right? Mm. So in that sense, you're right. It's the robe of the cult in a way, but of course in real life it isn't really.
Well,
in some ways, not only pop culture, also in
science fairs. When we do outreach, we'll dress in our white coats to show the kids.
Yeah,
give them something.
So they can identify as.
I have a little aside. Someone I know went to work at the L'Oreal labs, and there they have white lab coats, but they're expertly tailored. So you look absolutely fantastic in your white lab coat at the same time, which I think is amazing.
I think you're also just like more likely to trust somebody wearing a white lab coat than you are just like somebody in jeans and a t-shirt. Like
this has been shown in studies for doctors.
Yeah, exactly.
Who are not scientists, but I guess medicine is in a way, at least modern medicine is...
Piggybacking
science?
On science. Mm-hmm. It's using a lot of science in order to do what it wants to do.
Yeah. Exactly. This used to be different at some point, I guess.
And then I guess also like there is like a certain like devotion to science, right? So we spend a lot of money. As an American, I've spent a lot of money to, you know, be a scientist with my undergrad degree and things like that.
Tuition fees.
You've paid your dues.
I've worked a lot of hours, and you know here I am sitting as a PhD student. But there is a certain amount of devotion, the same devotion I would argue that would come from a religious like scholar.
Yeah, I guess so. Do you think being a scientist is an integral part of your personality?
Yes, I consider myself a really curious person, like, and I think that curiosity is best served as science, and I also think that I'm a critical person as well, and those are two things that I think that being a trained scientist has kind of honed in on me, so I do think that my personality is intertwined with being a scientist.
But science likes to think of itself as being critical,
yeah,
but it's not always very critical.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually quite difficult to be critical, kind of like your example of the Nobel Prize laureate who had to work very hard to get his what is now accepted truth to be published in the first place. So
there's this nice quote by Max Planck from, what was it, like 100 years ago roughly, science advances one funeral at a time, which kind of indicates that already then people didn't really want to believe in the new findings, even though many of them turned out to be right, especially with quantum mechanics and all these things that came along then. So, and also the same with what you mentioned at some point, the fight between Lamarckian and Darwinists during the evolution studies.
There are examples of dogma and... actually used the word, what I can't remember, schools of thought.
Yeah, schools of thought, yeah, for sure.
Where people have had really big battles, and two sides have formed within the scientific community, and people have been like excommunicated or been forced out of science.
Out of the scientific community?
Yeah, because their beliefs were deemed heretical, they're deemed like not true or whatever. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, those have been taken... Those people have been proved right, and in other cases they were wrong. They're just charlatans, and they made up some stuff and then moved on.
But what's wrong with having a false theory?
So the big example for the one you brought up, the Lamarckian genetics versus Darwinism genetics, the Soviet Union believed or decided that Lamarckian genetics was the principal form of the way genes were handed down. Mm-hmm. And so, because it adhered to to communist ideals. And so they caused a lot of famines because of the wheat breeding programs weren't scientific or weren't working that well. Okay. And this actually caused real problems. So yeah, there are examples where this has caused real world problems.
Yeah, beyond it just being like kind of like a waste of like time and resources as well. Mm. And yeah.
I mean, sometimes competition is good because the kind of idealized scientific discourse would be that I have an idea and you have maybe not a conflicting idea, but a different idea. And we both exchange ideas and knock down each other's ideas until the surviving idea is closer to what a closer model to what is real or, mm-hmm. or it accurately describes the universe. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in theory that should work, but it just doesn't in practice. It's a bit sad.
Yeah. The other big thing that we want to talk about, should we move on to the second part, or did we have more to say about the first part?
No, I think that's us. That's science as we see it from the inside.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have more on this point, or mm-hmm. should we?
I mean, it's just me moaning about my life as a scientist.
I mean, that's fine. We can.
Can we talk about how they like separate, or should we? Our views, like, so, like, we're talking about how it's like similar, but then I think the important thing to note is, like, you know, ideally our views are adjustable. I mean, if that's not, I guess, obvious enough. Oh, yeah, and then I guess another really big difference is that, like, the scientific method, which is, like, what we base science on, it's not meant to be, like, a rigid, all-defining system for behavior, but more just a way to sort of get closer to the truth. And so I think that's another really big difference between us and religion, whereas religion has, like, sort of codes and ways for you to live in order for you to live your best life. Like, science, the scientific method makes no assertions on that.
Not the method per se, mm-hmm. but in the end, based on science,
people prescribe ways to live your best life. Mm-hmm. Like, we're told to get enough sleep now. Mm-hmm. We're even told to meditate and these sorts of things.
Oh yeah, that's totally coming into
to make you how you should be feel fulfilled. Maybe not go to heaven, mm-hmm. Exactly, but
yeah.
It's starting to creep in those areas.
Thanks for taking over my argument. We hang out so much. Yeah. You just finished my argument. I get stuck. That's nice.
No, that's true. That's true for sure.
Yes, I guess that's kind of a nice transition to the second big topic we wanted to talk about on the same note is, well, now we discussed how science is a bit like religion from our perspective, but from a layperson, so someone who isn't a scientist, from their perspective, there is also... Well, I guess in a way, science became the religion of the modern culture. Now you do things because science tells you. So while back in the day, some religious leader would tell you, some priest or something, you would have to pay, what was this thing called when people paid to spend less time in purgatory?
Not sure. Oh, tithes?
This thing. And I don't know, I'm going to edit it in after. Yeah.
I don't know either.
Yeah,
sorry. Yeah, it's called indulgence.
Great, I'm glad I know that now.
Yeah, and nowadays people tell you to sleep enough or to eat mm-hmm. quinoa yogurt for breakfast. So
swallow poop pills as well.
Swallow poop pills. That's Chris's story.
That's my new story. Yeah. So this is like I was chatting to my granddad, and he was asking me whether. He should buy some copper bands to like alleviate his arthritis, and I said no. It's not going to help you, so on and so forth. But almost in the same conversation, I started describing how fecal matter transplants are this big new area of research, and people are very excited about them, and they're claiming that they cure diabetes, even your depression. Like having the correct gut bacteria will help you. Synthesize the right neurotransmitters, and therefore you will feel less depressed. And to him, he was an English teacher, and is fairly unscientific, not in a derogatory sense, but doesn't know a lot about the scientific canon. What's the difference between wearing a copper band on your wrist and swallowing someone else's poo? And like the claims being made, that people are now going to sell these things for money.
I guess he knows he can't judge. That's why he asks you, and he trusts. He believes you say the right thing because he believes you know.
Yeah, it's trust.
With your white lab coat.
Yeah. Show him a picture of me working.
Okay, but you can trust me. Here's my degree in chemistry, not in
any of these things.
Yeah. When we talked about
indulgence,
this was abused by some people in the religious community to make money from the population through this thing. Mm-hmm. This also happens a bit now with pseudoscience, with
mm-hmm. homeopathy.
I don't want to say homeopathy because I don't think this is actually the case.
People spend a lot of money on
homeopathy. Absolutely, but I don't think that, because homeopathy was accepted scientific fact back then, and then people figured out it was not.
But at that point, then it should not no longer have been used.
Yeah.
It's exactly.
It's still on sale.
But it's not really a scam thing, right?
It is a total scam.
My friend lives in Germany.
No, my friend lives in Germany, and doctors will literally try to get her to go to a homeopath. And she's like, no, like,
yeah, this has happened to me a lot. I was treated with homeopathy most of my life.
You look amazing.
That's why I have an awesome immune system. Are
you vaccinated?
Yeah, it's not this. There's two different levels. Homeopathy in Germany is pretty much accepted by most people.
That's so crazy.
Maybe not anymore.
What's an example of what do they give you? Do they just give you like mint? You're like, oh yeah, here's some mint. Like, go chew on this for your cold.
They call it something Latin.
It's not even if you.
It's just water.
Yeah, the dilution factor in homeopathy means that what you're drinking is essentially is water. There's no way.
Well, it's sugar from the globular.
Sometimes if it's a solid, it'll be a sugar pill. But yeah. If it's a liquid, it'll be water or ethanol. Yeah. So it's not even, it doesn't contain the active ingredient. It contains the memory of the active ingredient. It is.
Well, which doesn't exist, right?
There's doesn't no... exist. They are complete lies. And we're going to get this podcast banned in Germany. So it's going to be great.
Well, you didn't have the placebo effect, but
we didn't want to. Well, my point was.
I guess that's where.
Sorry, my point was homeopathy was not designed as a scam, unlike.
Indulgence.
Okay, maybe you claim the priests taking the money actually believed in it. Maybe that's true. But I definitely want to say there are pseudoscientific scams out there, these pyramid schemes, a lot of them, where I am sure the people advocating those know it's a scam and it's all bullshit.
The 23andMe testing, it's not accurate when it gives you back a read of like, oh yeah, you have a really high likelihood of developing this disorder and this disorder, for example. Those aren't very accurate at all, and those are only accurate if you're, well, even then it's questionable, but those are only really accurate if you're basically like a white person living in the UK. Even then it's like a little questionable. So, and people are selling that as like scientific facts. And, you know, even like the researchers that conduct the studies that this information is based on don't support these claims. So that's just something to keep in mind as well.
I wonder how much these sort of genetic testings are going to get the Hannah's homeopathy treatment later on. Like,
oh, totally.
It was considered true at the time, but later we will look back and be like, wow, that was totally out there.
Yeah.
And people are still scamming based on this kind of, not belief, but derived belief from a scientific protocol.
Yeah, so the what it's based on is something called polygenic risk scores, and those polygenic risk scores only determine like point something of a of 1% of you getting a certain disease. For example, like with mental health issues, it's just a super, super small makeup of your chances of developing mental health issues, which is just something to keep in mind when you're looking over your results, for sure.
I got really excited about polygenic risk scores recently. I went to a conference.
Oh, did you really?
I used them. I was totally close to getting 23andMe, so I could apply this lecturer's algorithm for my heart risk to heart disease.
You actually should do it, because since you are a white person from the UK, that's really accurate. Because the UK is like a massive center for data, and so they have like a lot of the genetic testing that we base our results on is from the UK population. So you are the prime candidate, and I would recommend you do it.
And we're open to sponsorship.
Yeah.
From 23andMe in the UK. Well, we don't promote any other forms of sponsorship if it's not scientifically accurate.
Anyway.
I wanted to clarify that here I'm speaking specifically about the polygenic risk scores for mental health disorders, and that the polygenic risk scores for other disorders may be a little bit more predictive, but as a whole, we're not to the stage right now for them to be overwhelmingly informative.
People often turn to religion in times of crisis. I guess that's either you're born into it and you're raised very religious, or something happens in your life and religion fulfills that void. Can science do the same thing? Do you think science... Yeah. Can it, Ashley?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think science does. I mean, if I find out like a loved one has a certain type of like cancer illness, the first thing I absolutely do is I go and I look at the research on it. Like, what's the life expectancy?
Is it comforting?
It is, because then it gives you some amount of certainty to like, okay, my loved one has this percentage of a chance of surviving. And to me, that's comforting to know sort of what happens on the global scale. Also, like how maybe the disease works or something.
I'm not sure.
For me, that is comforting. I don't know.
That's interesting. That's a very interesting point. Yeah. I was thinking about this question before obviously, but I didn't. I was thinking science is just the opposite of comforting. It's so devastating in a way. It's because so, I want to say real.
It's like bleak, yeah. But for me, it's kind of comforting to sort of like know. I don't want to say the truth, because obviously science never really fully captures the truth, but it's more comforting for me to have an understanding of like, okay, what does this look like on a bigger scale, like outside of myself? And it's helpful for me to also depersonalize it a little bit by making it more medical or more scientific. It's no longer this disease that my grandmother has. Now it's this disease that affects 12% of the population, and she has 50% chance of surviving if she takes this treatment and this treatment. I don't know. Somehow that's more comforting to me.
That's a good point.
It's the thing that science can't at the moment give you, mm-hmm. and I don't think it will, is a comfort if the certainty of death is 100%. That's where religion can kind of step in and be like, well, actually, after this point, things will be okay. There is an afterlife. There are these sorts mm-hmm. of certainties and these sorts of things. And so far, science hasn't got anywhere near that.
Well, that's actually, I think, where the biggest difference between science and religion, where they both make claims about creation, the universe of humankind, or... Is the building collapsing?
Oh, God.
Wouldn't that be a fun thing to capture on the podcast? Speaking of the end of the world.
I think we angered God. I think we really angered God right now.
I didn't want to summon it though. But,
yeah, God.
Where was I?
where
science, science and religion are the same, is they make claims about creation, the beginning of the universe, of life, and these things.
Even illness. They say if you pray, you get better. Yeah, you take this pill, these things. Better.
What science doesn't make claims about is spirituality. That's the one thing, and metaphysics, kind of by definition, untouched by natural sciences, because, well, you can't, right?
Well, I would argue, like, meditation, we were talking about that earlier, but, like, meditation is very much it's not necessarily, like, a spiritual practice, I guess, but it does, in some ways, kind of tap into that sort of aspect, and, like, there is this whole kind of mind, well, now it's like, I guess maybe a bit more me philosophizing or whatever, but like there's the idea of like the mind-body connection, and it is like a legitimate sort of thing, right?
And like the origin of consciousness.
Yeah. Like, I mean, oh, yeah.
It's well, kind we still of, don't know what consciousness is.
I know, but like considering idea. You can take certain chemicals like anesthetics and not shut down your consciousness.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and we still don't know how they work.
We're elevated,
but people are studying it, and in this building actually are doing research to try and work out where that connection.
Good that listeners don't know where we're sitting. Is it still your apartment building?
Oh yeah, it's actually in my apartment. That's where they're doing the research.
Basement.
Yeah. In the basement, I've got them locked up, and then I'll tell you when they come out with an answer. No, we're sitting in the Karolinska Institute in the biomedical. Jesus, where are we now? Still locked up in the basement by my professor.
Okay, we're on the 9th floor.
But yeah,
the point I made that science doesn't really touch that, and you said
mm-hmm.
it does through meditation, the mind-body connection, these things.
Yeah, there's some things that are not disagree. Human, yeah.
Don't want to disagree at all. And I think with the study of consciousness, science is kind of touching on that realm in a way, but again, science really disenchants it.
It definitely attempts to like put a non, I can't think of a better word, but like a non-sexy view on it, right?
Non-transcendent.
So like a non-transcendent view. Like, so if I just tell you, oh, like your attachment to somebody after you start dating them for a while is just a high increase of oxytocin in your brain. Like, that's what it is. Like, that's the feeling. But then that's not like love, right? Like, love is a different sort of flowy, beautiful thing. Yeah. It's not just like a brain chemical. But it actually is just a brain chemical. So that's, yeah.
Yeah. So that's where science makes things boring and...
Or more exciting, because then it's like, wow, that's what's happening within me.
I love the oxytocin flow.
Yeah, you really bring out the oxytocin in me. I have to say, I'm really feeling the oxytocin on this date.
I have to say, I think I become, with things like meditation and stuff, I've become more trusting of performing meditation now that studies have shown that the oxytocin levels increase. I'm not sure it's oxytocin, but something was going on in my brain. I definitely have become more accepting of certain religious practices because of the studies of those things.
But not because of the spirituality, not because of the claims religion is making, but because you trust the scientific evidence for it, completely disconnected from
because I'm a true believer in the scientific.
Yeah, exactly.
The MRI machine.
Because I'm a believer. And it's
some shitty publication says meditating is good for your whatever you have.
Yeah. And I trust, like you were saying, I trust those people rather than I trust a priest to tell me something.
Yeah, the priest has to go through so much to convince you of anything while this one publication in, or even a secondary article on BuzzFeed, and you buy it.
Let's be fair. These publications I may have read may have been on BuzzFeed.
Exactly.
12 gifts.
12 ways to make yourself more relaxed after a stressful meeting.
That's where science is kind of the religion of our generation.
Yeah, because it's like NASA scientists have found life or have made life in, and we go, oh, good, I feel so much better. So, sort of to maybe wrap this up a bit, what can we do if science now holds this position in society, a quasi-religious or at least a very trusted position in society? What can we do to make sure that we don't lose that trust?
That's an insanely grand question. Can you dial it back just a bit?
No. I think that's a good question to ask. I think that like we need to just take a closer look at like where we're placing the sort of the grandness of the hierarchy, right? So like maybe we do need to take a second look at the editors of the journals that we're looking at the journals themselves that we're looking at.
So you're saying if you were to meet a Nobel laureate on the way out of the building, you would just like sub bro? And not treating them like the same.
Some Nobel Prize laureates are super racist.
Oh yeah, we can talk about that a little bit later. But yeah, for sure, that's another podcast. Actually,
there's quite a lot of Nobel Prize laureates that hold suspect views.
I think it's Watson. Wait.
We will Google this because it might be libelous. One of the two.
Yes.
Was super racist.
This one.
Watson.
Guy was an asshole.
This one I knew actually. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, there's. Darwin was an asshole. Darwin believed that women were just like inherently inferior to men, and we basically lost like a whole like or decades of research that we could have done and learned more about like women's role in evolution, and we just didn't because he believed that women were just passive, basically vehicles in evolution.
Really?
Yeah.
Except when his research suggested. Probably not.
No, that's just him being sexist. Mm. And I highly recommend you read more into that. I don't think we have the time to get into it right now. But that's actually a whole other podcast about how it set back research on evolution.
So yeah, I think we can't give people a free pass, definitely. Managed to do some science that's good,
absolutely not.
Then
and also we don't, in this thing we don't, I mean, Watson lost his position as his faculty position, right? Yeah. After saying these things about people and intelligence and these things.
So the other question is, what do we take away from it? Is science like a religion? Is it a religion? Okay, let me rephrase those questions. Does science behave like religion did or does as a community, an organization? And does it fulfill the same role for people as religion did, let's say, 50, 100 years ago or so, or maybe even more?
Should we go around the table?
Ashley. Oh, no, okay. Well, so I think that science functions really in the same way that a religion functions for most people in my life, I can say. I do like to think that I am a little bit more critical than maybe most religious people are about their own religion, but in all honesty, science gives me a lot of comfort. I derive a lot of my own, understanding of myself through science and understanding of my world. And yeah, I mean, I think it is kind of the new religion for a lot of people.
I think I agree. I think it does have that. The only thing where maybe I'm more critical of religion is the fact, more pro-science, is that the sciences can be, and some scientists are, self-aware of this and also self-questioning and constantly asking the question, like we did in this podcast, mm-hmm. which is, I think, the most important thing you need to do, is to constantly ask yourself, why am I thinking this? Is this going to hold true in this case, in other cases, in different scenarios? Mm-hmm. And just always question everything that you're being told.
I definitely agree with both of you. Ashley, when you said that it is the religion of everyone right now, like science mm-hmm. fills the same role as religion did. And I think that's a great thing. That's why we have everyone's vaccinated until very recently. And just many things aren't questioned anymore, but people trust or believe, I guess more believe in science, because, well, as a layman, for sure, you can question it. On the other hand, since I guess we found a few points where science as an institution works a bit like a religious community, and I think that's a bit of an issue for the scientific community, like maybe even a big issue.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the Nobel Prize per se, but just the entire thing of this worshipping single personalities mm-hmm. for their achievement, but then we worship the person and not their achievement.
Yeah.
Also, but not only. I think that's really an issue. And as you said, Chris, the only thing we can do is be aware of it. Question, why do I believe in this? Why do I? What would happen for me to revoke my trust? Would I actually? But also, to a certain extent, I think it's fair to believe in certain things. Just outside our niche, I can't judge at all what is true and what isn't. I just have to trust. And even if there's a shitty article in high impact journal, I'm going to believe it. Just because I have to. Because I can't judge myself.
I could have gone on to shitty, like, high impact journals. We should not trust them just because. But,
science yeah. bless us, everyone. Yeah, yeah. yeah. Don't read it just because you saw it in Nature. You heard it here first. Yes.
Yeah. Add your own critical thinking onto high impact journals.
Yes, yeah. Please do.
Well, I guess that's a topic for another day. How the publication crisis, as some people call it, and
that's a big thing.
Instead of
being
in your field, actually,
huge thing in my field. And I would just like to add, because psychology always gets the brunt of it, neuroscience replicates less often than psychology studies do. And again, we can talk about this for another day. But and actually, even in genetics, so candidate gene studies, which is never replicated. It wasn't until we started looking at science a different way. We basically lost 10 years of progress in genetic studies. Yeah, so another reason not to believe everything you read.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. So there was a whole replication crisis in my field, and the way that we solved it was actually by, like, working together and coming together with, like, these massive data sets of, like, millions of people. And now we do genome-wide association studies instead of just looking at candidate genes or just one gene.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Another day.
The end.